House Committee on Healthcare to order for this beautiful third day of April. And we're going to end up with a pretty light agenda today, it turns out. I'll make a few announcements. We may get done very quickly. First of all, 3466. Jim, you want to talk about that?
Yes, that is my bill. I guess I will talk about it. This is a bill that is the first attempt at lining out. We're talking a long time about spreading out health care to various providers and how we broaden that base. This is one of those bills. I have heard from a number of people that are very, very interested in this bill and were not asleep when it was launched. So as a consequence of that, I am going to pull the bill back, and we're going to put together hopefully if the chair concurs, an interim work group to work on this, because I think we've got a lot we can do. We just need to have a better discussion and agreement on how to do it. So that bill will not be moving forward this session, but the subject will.
And Representative Thompson and I will coordinate that.
Yes.
On that work group. And somebody said it was good to have a pharmacist on it. So.
Yes.
And I said a pharmacist in recovery.
Yeah.
Sorry, what is it? You're keeping track of the work groups. We're going to try and ration our work groups, but we have, I think, four proposals for work groups already.
Emergency Thursday. Friday off.
I'm going to carry over, keep up this comment until Friday, House Bill 2076. It'll be back on the agenda on Friday, and we'll talk about the role CEOs have on managing their systems for personal security to avoid having 4,000 medical records off in somebody's car to be stolen for the second time now in 4 years.
On the beach in Hawaii.
On the beach in Hawaii or...
whatever.
Or in downtown Portland. We are carrying over 2090 for want of the final amendment. The intention of the final amendment that we'll be considering, which might be the number 17-17 or 18 or some number, I'm not sure what it is, will only eliminate the sunset on those current statutes and will do nothing else. So we'll be working that bill as soon as we get the amendment, failing any further breakdowns in the computer system. It does nothing. The amendment will amend the bill and we'll pass it, and it will do nothing but eliminate the current sunset.
It's a status quo.
It's a status quo, right. All right. What else, Mr. Administrator? We have something else to announce? Oh, yeah. Another work group will be scheduled for 2137. Representative Kenny Geyer will help coordinate that work group. So we're going to pull that bill. And it's a bill everybody thinks is important. We need to figure out quite how to do it the most effective way and to make it. And she's done such a good job getting total consensus on the direct entry midwives.
Can I say something
in your defense?
Well, I'm really honored that Representative Thompson wants to co-lead this work group with me. And there, and again, this was catalyzed by David Clemente, who is a constituent of mine and on one of the work groups for CCO, health transformation, physical therapist, has a lot of experience. But there are a number of other people who have been involved and have expressed interest and been part of informal meetings at this point, out of Oregon Health Authority, DMAP, Don Ross, and then Brian Niebert. DHS Voc Rehab has been there at the table, DHS Developmental Disabilities, Patrice Potsford, APD out of DHS, Mike McCormick, DCBS will probably have someone. There's this community warehouse, Christy Wood, they're starting to do this now as a nonprofit out in Beaverton. They have a whole section of DME. There was a woman from Gobi from Eastern Oregon that testified in front of this committee. So a number of people have expressed interest, and if there are others who are interested in that work group, please let Representative Thompson or me know. I think it's a lot of potential savings for every dollar spent in this. In a couple of the other states that we looked at, there were $3 in savings that were resulted from being able to recycle durable medical equipment. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think we have to be a little, one thing we have to be a little cautious about as we think about this is putting burden on the agencies beyond minimal burden. Mr. Administrator, if I have it right now, we have a work session on 2611, on HCR 16, and a public hearing and possible work session on 2928. Is that?
That's correct.
Is that what you're keeping score? Okay. Well, let's open a work session on HCR 16. Will you tell us what it's about, and then we'll ask if there's a clam down there?
He's not here.
No. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 16 recognizes addiction as a disease and resolves that prevention and treatment should address biological, behavioral, and environmental factors.
Dash one of them.
This claims bill.
Yes, it is.
Let's close this work session and come back to it when we have our... the rest of our members here. Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2611 and talk to us about where we are on that. And if you'll just tell us what the bill is, I think you're going to
say something about the amendment.
Good deal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2611, its original form requires specified health regulatory boards to adopt rules by January 1st, 2017, requiring licensees to document participation in continuing education approved by the Oregon Health Authority, reduce health care disparities, and improve cultural competency. Requires OHA to collaborate with boards to define cultural competency, develop a list of continuing education opportunities, and provide lists to boards on or before January 1st, 2015. Declares an emergency effective on its passage.
Representative Kenny Geyer, will you lead us through this discussion?
Sure. So had a chance to talk to most of you so far. I know you've had a lot of visits from people who are passionate about this issue. I see it as, in part, trying to close some of the disparities that we have in Oregon on health outcomes, particularly around race, ethnicity issues. And there was a bill that we passed unanimously out of this committee and it passed, I think, unanimously on the floor on health equity data collection, that we would start collecting data and disaggregating data. So among, for instance, Asian and Pacific Islanders, there are very different cultural and body types among, for instance, Pacific Islanders versus Eastern Asian Chinese. And we need to collect that data. Many of you in this room were very influential in helping us see that issue and bringing it to us. But once you collect the data, then the other part is how do you devise different strategies and really work with different cultural communities to make sure that our healthcare providers are not seeing people just for their pulse and their weight or their height, but the whole cultural context in which they live. And this bill attempts to do that. In its original form, the bill required licensing boards to mandate cultural competency as part of continuing education for all of their licensees. The amendments that we have here now, the dash six, is saying that the boards need to come up with what is the culturally competent continuing education that's appropriate for their profession. So it might be dentists or nurses or doctors or social workers or midwives. That would be appropriate, and they would do that with Oregon Health Authority, Tricia Tillman, the head of Office of Health Equity. And then they could choose, if they felt that it was in the interest of their profession to make their professionals better at what they do, they could choose to mandate it among their licensees. But this bill, the biggest change is that we are not mandating that all of the licensees get cultural competency. We'll be working with the boards to go through the rulemaking process to decide cultural competency as part of their continuing ed, and that they then will offer it, track it and report back to us in 2 years, and they can decide if they want to mandate it for their, you know, those who are running the profession will decide whether this is something that they should mandate for all of their professionals. So that's the dash six. And the dash five has to do with community colleges and universities in their health clinics for their licensed providers, who will now have a licensing board that will say what culturally competent care looks like for them. The university and community college clinics can, again, decide, again, it's permissive, not mandate, they can decide whether they require that of their licensed employees. So that's the dash five. Those are the two amendments. We've had really great input, and a number of organizations have been at the table for a long time on this, working over the past couple of years with Office of Health Equity. Some had signed on early on, some signed on as the bill evolved since you last heard it, and they felt that it was a much stronger bill. So among some of the groups, many of you in the room, SEIU, Oregon Medical Association, Oregon Nurses Association, AARP, Basic Rights Oregon, Coalition of Communities of Color, Elder in Actions, Main Street Alliance, Oregon Community Health Workers Association, Oregon Healthcare Association, Oregon Primary Care Association, Oregon Students Association, Oregon Student-Based Healthcare Network, Providence Health System, Urban League, We Can Do It Better, et cetera. Long list of supporters for this. So I'm...
Okay, do we have a motion?
Yes. I move that to adopt the Dash 5 Amendments dated 3-2013 and the Dash 6 Amendments dated 3-2013.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves that we add the dash five amendments dated 3-2013 and the dash six amendments dated 3-2013 to House Bill 2611. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Any objections? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Actually, appreciate.
Wait till the bill, or
I was just going to say as. To the amendments.
Okay.
Appreciate all the work that Representative Kenny Geyer did on these amendments to get it there, to make it to where it's permissive and everything. So I want to thank her for all of her work, and I'll support the amendments at this point, but I probably won't be supporting the bill.
Okay. Are there any objection to the amendments? The amendments are part of the bill. Let's have a motion on the bill as amended.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2611 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 2611 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. President Wyden, would you also like it? Just a chance?
Yeah.
Good. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Kenny Geyer, for your leadership on this. You know, this originally was a bill that affected over 141,000 licensed professionals. And in my mind, to have arbitrary decisions about people who are supposed to meet professionally standards of competence, which would include many of these cultural competence kinds of issues, or I think hopefully all of them, in the sense that they should be careful about who they work. I found the idea of making it mandatory quite objectionable, and I think this is a much better solution. It allows people to look at this much differently, and those that need work ought to get it, and those that feel they don't need it, I guess that it gives them the liberty to exercise that right as well. And so I think
they may be the ones that need it the most.
Well, and that's one of the interesting questions, but on the other hand, this is America, too.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then Representative Thompson.
This is an issue that I've had lots of discussions with my family members on who live this, go through it day in and day out. My father-in-law speaks very, very little English, has tons of medical problems, medical issues. Has never felt that he's ever had a problem or issue, and he feels like they almost bend over backwards for him. And I just worry when we start dictating and telling hospitals, different facilities, how they need to act and handle these issues, I don't think that's the appropriate place for government to be. I think each individual enterprise should handle it the way they feel is best, effective, and necessary to deal with the situation. I don't think it's something that is destroying our healthcare system because of this issue, and for that reason, I will not be supporting this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson?
Yeah, I too want to just congratulate the people who worked on this for getting it to where it is. We're in a tough spot with healthcare in trying to move everything forward at lightning speed and yet try not to do too many mandates that are unattainable. I think this sets a clear direction that we'd like to go without putting dates and absolutes on it. One question I had today that I'm satisfied is dealt with well is on the linguistic part. Some people read it differently than I do. I would hope everybody takes a deep breath and we move into this incrementally. You know, I would be very disappointed to see somebody file a lawsuit the day this breaks that somebody doesn't speak enough Swahili somewhere. That's not the, I don't read the intention of the bill, and that language is squarely, squarely in accordance with the Affordable Care Act. In fact, in going through the Affordable Care Act, I can't find anything in this bill that's not built into the federal statute anyway, and it's coming. So we may as well recognize that fact and start looking at how we're going to accommodate in Oregon so long as we're going down that road. So I'm very pleased with where I think we are today.
Okay, is there any other discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Clint?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Markley?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
No.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenwood?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Kenny Geyer, will you carry it on the floor?
Be honored to.
Close the work session on House Bill 2611 and open a work session on HCR
16.
Would you tell us about the bill and you tell us about the amendment?
Yeah. Thank you, sir. I was late. I was in my chair's meeting in the speaker's office, which was during lunch hour today.
What an excuse.
Poor baby.
Yeah, it's terrible. The resolution, as you might recall, has essentially some declarations. It's a series of whereases dealing with the really fact that addiction has a very real component that's not about just behaviors or somebody, you know, poor character, bad moral makeup, those kind of things. And that's what we talked about the other day in committee. The chair had some great recommendations that he had recalled back from the National Institute of Health definition, and so we went and found those and incorporated those into the what's now the Dash 1 amendments that describe the same way that the National Institute of Health does the addiction as a chronic relapsing brain. Oh, now I've got to find them. I had them in my hands a moment ago. Chronic relapsing brain disease affecting an individual's behavior, which comes out of the NIH definition. And I would recommend its support.
And the other piece of that amendment is that
biological instead of behavioral. Down on line 23.
Thank you for doing that. Yeah. Is there any, let's get a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to HCR 16 dated 2/26/13.
The Dash 1 amendments are, Representative Thompson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated
2/26/13
to HCR 16. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Is there any objection? Dash 1s are part of HCR 16. Amendment on the bill? I mean, a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 16 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves HCR 16 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Let's take the roll.
Representative Clinton?
Aye.
Representative Representative Conger?
Aye.
Oh, yes.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Clemmer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative Whitner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Dyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenwood?
Aye. Motion carries. HCR 16 goes to the floor. Will you be so kind as to carry that, Representative Clemmer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your work on it.
Thank you.
Close the work session on HCR 16 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2928. Will you tell us what that bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2928 modifies the definition of hazardous substance to include substances that cause irreversible harm or chronic adverse health effect. It modifies related provisions to reflect the definitional change. It requires the Director of the Oregon Health Authority to drop standards for labeling of articles that contain hazardous substances.
President Hovey, will you join us and talk to us about the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, Paul Holvey, State Representative, House District 8 in the South Central Lane County area. Thank you for the hearing on House Bill 2928. I will tell you that there is an amendment that's being worked on with Oregon Health Authority and Oregon OSHA and the Governor's Office on this bill. As we're looking at hazardous substance definitions in different agencies that aren't quite connected with each other very well. But generally, this bill is about hazardous substances, and of course, the Oregon Health Authority's, ability to act on finding hazardous substances in Oregon. I will just tell you briefly that the intent of this bill is essentially to help define this and also to help the agency address chronic issues with hazardous substances and not just acute. Chronic issues aren't spelled out very clearly in the statutes, and it's very important that in an effort of public health, we be aware that there are definite chronic impacts from hazardous substances in Oregon. And so that's part of the bill. Another piece of the bill is also their ability to make sure that articles containing some of these substances can be labeled as well instead of actually labeling the substance themselves, and that's a part of Section 3. And I will go on with another quick little piece of the bill that's very important, and that's in the Section 4, Subsection 7, is an addition to that particular ORS, which basically allows the Oregon Health Authority to look at, you may be familiar with the Interstate Clearinghouse for hazardous substances and science and peer-reviewed studies, to be able to actually use those in helping them make their determinations on hazardous substances. And that's really simply what this bill is about, although when we got into, you know, looking at the definitions of hazardous substances, it opened up a lot of other issues. Oregon OSHA is also has hazardous substances in their statutes, and they have definitions that are aimed at workplace safety, which is not exactly the same mission as Oregon Health Authority has in hazardous substances and trying to protect the public health. And so we're working on an amendment to try to make those systems work together better and still accomplish the goals in this bill. And so I wished I had that amendment for you, but it hasn't come out yet. So this will be another short hearing for you.
Well, we've got some folks who want to talk about it. There's also some folks here from OHA and OSHA. Would any of you like to make a comment before we get into public testimony?
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I may ask Representative Holvey just one question.
You can ask him any number of questions.
I don't think that's fair, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'd like to second that motion.
You don't have to answer, though.
Good point.
Actually, Representative Holvey, I was just going through it, and was actually at Section 4 and going through some of the other stuff. And I just want to make sure this is your intent when I'm reading the bill, but it looks like you want to put all the power in the Oregon Health Authority's hands to make the decisions and take it away from the legislative process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, no, that's not exactly true. The legislature, I can't take any power away from the legislature. However, I will note that since being in this legislature, I have watched the legislature have specific chemicals come before it to ban. And it's been sort of a troubling process to recognize that in 2007 we were talking about doing something about labeling BPA, for example, or banning BPA. And, you know, the legislature then has to take, you know, a group of citizen legislators and become scientists in making a decision on whether something is really threatens the health of Oregonians, or whether or not the science, which science they should believe, and understanding that scientific research. I'm not saying the legislature doesn't have the authority to do that, but when we have scientists, they ought to be able, and we have a statutory authority for them to do these things, we should make sure they have the tools to accomplish that and be able to look at hazardous substances and make those determinations, whether it's labeling or whether it's banning. Those authorities are in statute right now, but they're very cumbersome and really not very effective for the agency to carry out. And as the legislature, I think, banned decabromide at one point, or maybe it was pentabromide or whatever, and it was well vetted, and it was declared, you know, by the legislature, this is hazardous, we should ban it. Well, the industry came back changing a molecule, and now we had to turn around next session and ban pentabromide or decabromide, whichever one came first. And, you know, so it's a continual game for the legislature to try to catch up with if they ever do decide to ban a particular or label a particular hazardous substance. Instead of letting our scientists at the state level and our epidemiologists and toxicologists and all those folks say, well, this is a substance that contains something that we've declared as hazardous, and so it seems like a much more efficient and also accurate process to let scientists make those decisions.
I'd like to ask you a question, if I may. When I used to run a large...
I don't have to answer, though.
You don't have to.
Okay.
When I used to run a large organization, I remember one of the things that we had to do was to keep an active inventory of what was defined as hazardous products, and I thought that was for dealing with the fire department, letting the fire department know if they had to show up what it is they were going to deal with. And it had lots of things. It had a book this thick with all those things, including whiteout, I remember, was one of the items in there that was hazardous for some reason or another. Can you tell us in a word what the purpose of this labeling is to do? What is the labeling we're asking OHA to do here? Is it about products manufactured? Is it about products to have personal exposure to? What in a word are we trying to achieve here?
We're trying to protect the public's health from hazardous substances, in a word. And, you know, we have those big books that are sometimes, for example, or OSHA has big books of hazardous substances.
Those are OSHA things.
And, you know, the mission of or OSHA, and they adopt definitions, from my understanding, from federal and international agreements about hazardous substances, which are mainly aimed at protecting people in the workplace on how to handle hazardous substances and how to be aware of them and be aware of what the dangers are, but not so much in the realm of whether those hazardous substances exist in products that are for sale in Oregon. And whether or not they actually could cause put people in the hospital if they weren't aware that they were hazardous. So there are definitely different missions between the book that OSHA would have as opposed to you know, substances that can cause serious health impacts, whether it's acute or chronic.
Representative Thompson and Representative Conger.
I'm having a little problem understanding the mechanics of this. We have a product made in New York, and it's shipped in large quantities to a national distribution warehouse in Omaha, and from there it's shipped to regional distribution houses in Boise and Medford. Where do we intersect that product to get Oregon labeling on it when the manufacturer doesn't even know where those cases are going at the time they leave the factory, and we and labeling equipment isn't something that's readily available in the big box store or at the regional distribution center? I'm looking, I guess, the point of intercept to get products labeled custom for Oregon.
Representative Greenlick and Representative Thompson, this may be one of the questions I won't answer, but that's a question for the agency, but in fact, if they recognize or have identified that there's a product being sold in Oregon that's causing some sort of public health that's imminent, they probably have the authority to go in and have it removed from sale in Oregon, and ask the retailers then to contact their manufacturers or whoever to, if you're going to sell this, it needs to have a warning label on it or it's not allowed in Oregon. I think they currently have that authority. But I would have to defer, for a more accurate answer to the agency on that.
Representative Conger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holvey, in the practice of law, I've actually used the defined term hazardous substance a lot in business transactions. And the reason that I used it was because there's a high level of concern or a certain liability that can go with the transfer of property, for example, that's been contaminated with hazardous substances. There's also a federal definition in their environmental laws, so that if you're not handling or disposing of hazardous substances properly, that also can trigger liability. And part of the reason that I used it, and I know other, I mean, this is a common practice, and I'm getting to my question, but I wanted to give you sort of a sense of why I'm somewhat familiar with this. Part of the reason that it's used is because it's very precise. If you look at the rest of ORS 453005 and the defined terms that we would be amending here on the first page of the bill to expand what is a hazardous substance, the additional language is very, very broad, whereas the language that is there, I think, is very intentionally crafted in a way that it's not over-inclusive. So, to give you an example, under the old definition, it's pretty clear you're talking about corrosives and irritants and things that can blow up. Under the new definition, something that could cause a substance that could cause irreversible harm, and I don't mean to be facetious, I'm taking an obviously extreme example, but if you threw a rock at me right now because you didn't like my question, that piece of hunk of granite could cause irreversible harm. Attorneys get into that level of absurdity, especially in litigation, and I am curious where the language, how was the language generated? And then I'll add a comment, which you can obviously respond to. It seems to me that we're actually taking a separate subject, probably, which is potential contaminants in food packaging, or things that could have long-term health effects from a lifetime of exposure, and we're shoehorning it into a statute that's pretty carefully crafted, I believe, to deal with things that are really, really unsafe and tend to be in big barrels that leak.
Representative Greenlick and Representative Conger, and the question is?
How'd you come up with irreversible harm or a chronic adverse health effect or through prolonged use or exposure?
Quite frankly, Representative Conger and Representative Greenlink, I can't remember how I came up with that. I actually came up with that in 2007, and my memory doesn't go back that far very well. I will say, rather than belabor the definition, that is one of the key points that the governor's office and or OSHA and Oregon Health Authority are discussing with an amendment. The definition is really a tricky thing, as you mentioned, because we do have federal definitions and we have state definitions. And I guess the point of the bill is the ability of the Oregon Health Authority to look at chronic exposure from substances and to be able to do something about it. That's essentially what we're looking at, and whether or not we're running afoul of federal definitions of hazardous substances to try to keep attorneys from having absurd arguments in courtrooms. It really didn't enter into my mind too much. So I'm sure the legislative or counsel to the agencies are looking at that specific issue around the definition of hazardous substances and making sure we don't, you know, have unintended consequences by expanding it in the wrong direction.
Thank you. Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
So, and
Representative Kenner.
Just to make sure that, you know, that I take it out of the absurd argument stage and put it back into and thank you, by the way.
You gave me the opportunity.
Yeah. Hey, I lobbed up a softball. Go ahead and take it. But this would, and so I understand, we're working on the definitional issue. But what, in addition to the absurd argument and the change that would be made here and the expansion of the definition of hazardous substance, the finishing part of my rather long comment last time was, it seems like we're dealing with something that's different. And what I was meaning to say by that is, you know, I have a concern about substances that we're exposed to in the environment. I think most people do, for a variety of reasons, over a lifetime. And what effect that has on our health, things like development of allergies, harm, you know, development of diseases. My sense, though, is that this statute and the definition of hazardous substances is actually dealing with something that is much more immediate. Is dealing, and it's important, right, that there's a distinction. I'm not saying that the concept that you're talking about is a bad one. I'm not arguing against it at all. But what I am saying is there's probably two levels of risk and harm that we're dealing with here. And if I have a can of gasoline and I'm playing around an open flame, that can kill you or certainly hurt you just like that. Or if I have a vat of acid that is leaking and I come in contact with it, the harm's immediate. I'm just suggesting that perhaps this isn't the right statute to amend in order to accomplish the goal.
And Representative Greenlick and Representative Conger, and I'm not sure I disagree with you totally on that either. But I will note that the Oregon Health Authority has dealt with lead, for example, in the world of chronic exposures, and I believe that it may be dealt with in ORS 453 as well. So it may not fit into this exact section, but I think there is a section of law that under the authority of the Oregon health authority to deal with chronic issues as well. So, but I do agree that maybe the definition part needs to be set aside. Maybe we're talking about two different things here. That may in fact be something I agree with you about.
Commissioner Kenema? Then we'll move on to a witness list that we
have. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a preliminary fiscal on this?
I don't think we've asked for a fiscal.
Well, it seems to me you're going to ask the health authority to do a rather prodigious amount of work, and I can't imagine that it doesn't cost a fortune.
I expect when we find out there's a fiscal, we'll end up with a Ways and Means referral to it. But we haven't asked, so we haven't got the stage where we asked for it yet, especially with a big amendment coming. Thank you very much, Representative Holby. Thanks for bringing this to us. Let me call a few folks very anxious to support your bill, I think. In spite of the fact that they checked opposition, I'm sure they're just supporters. They're potential supporters ready to be comported to real supporters. Let's see. We have Matt Markey, James Curry, Sean Miller, and then after them, we'll have Drew Hegedorn and Jim Craven.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Markey representing the American Chemistry Council today, testifying in opposition to House Bill 2928.
Oh, darn.
I'm not going to take a lot of time. I just want to hit on a few notes. I did submit written testimony from Tim Shestick of the American Chemistry Council, but first I just want to say the American Chemistry Council want all products to be safe, and all of their members invest significant resources in products to help ensure safety of the products that contain different chemicals and alike. The bill as drafted to us seems to make a presumption that the presence of a hazardous substance in a product automatically would require regulation, or at least under this new definition of what a hazardous substance is. And by adding chronic health effects to the definition of a hazardous substance will greatly expand the health authority's regulatory power over hazardous substances without a clear definition as to what the process or what science will be actually used in determining what a chronic effect is. And I recognize the section that Representative Holby mentioned talking about science. And because BPA was brought up, I'll just mention that is one chemical, bisphenol A, that has probably been studied maybe more than any other chemical that is out there, and there are studies that say a lot of various things, but our federal our FDA has said one thing, and they've said that it's safe in the amount of that we are exposed to it. And so without some sort of process as to what kind of science they're going to use or look at, it makes us at least nervous, I guess I should say, and what we're going to actually do, or what process would be take to determine what something is to be identified as chronic. And lastly, I'll just say that the Federal Hazardous Substance Act regulates labeling of hazardous household products, and we feel that this bill may be potentially preempted by federal law on labeling, which typically requires a state's warning label to be identical to those that are required by the federal act. And with that, I'm happy. I'll turn it over to these guys and answer any questions I may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is James Curry. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Northwest Food Processors Association, and I too am here in opposition to House Bill 2928. We believe the bill creates overlapping regulatory authority under Section 2, Subsection 5 brings food packaging under Oregon Health Authority by changing the food and drug exemption currently in statute, and Section 3, Subsection 1 grants OHA authority over food product labeling. And as you've heard mentioned already, FDA and in fact the Oregon Department of Agriculture have oversight authority over food packaging and labeling. The FDA maintains the proper internal staff with expertise and the apparatus and bureaucratic infrastructure that's necessary for evaluating the safety of food contact substances. And in fact, they maintain an unbiased science advisory board to continuously review chemicals of interest for public health. You've heard BPA. That's one that's been reviewed in recent years and is the agency continues to look at. The ODA is the state authority that works with the FDA to enforce state and federal regulations on food manufactured and sold in Oregon, and I would hope that the prime sponsor of the bill in the amendments that are coming together in the conversations with state agencies, they would include ODA in those conversations as well. We also believe this creates a potential conflict with FDA food labeling because those regulations maintain an expectation that all food label statements are truthful and not misleading. And we believe an Oregon-specific precautionary statement that FDA has not determined or confirmed the science on could be considered misleading under federal regulations. Changes to hazardous substance definition in Section 1, Subsection 7A could create new liability, and that liability could extend to compounds that are deemed safe by FDA but not OHA. One of those would be BPA of concern to food processing industry. So an epoxy resin that contains BPA used in food and beverage containers and glass jar seals. They prevent the breakdown of lining, without which the container would erode, leading to contamination and potentially severe or fatal consequences for consumers. And I would agree with the statement earlier, a concern for immediate harm in our industry would fall very quickly into that category without the use of these chemicals. The FDA has determined that the scientific evidence this time does not suggest that very low-level exposures to BPA through the diet are unsafe. And in fact, food processors, can manufacturers, and coating manufacturers have been looking at alternatives the last several years, not out of a concern for consumer safety in BPA, but out of pressure and concern from consumer groups and legislative bodies. And in fact, you know, the reality is that viable alternatives may still be many years off. The alternatives that do exist have a shorter shelf life, and that will impact problems in distribution and consumer expectations. We believe a overlapping regulatory authority here would put Oregon food processors at a disadvantage if they couldn't use this important technology, and we'd urge you not to move the bill forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You're not worried about them proposing food as a hazardous product, are you?
it could happen, as you heard. We don't know what the science would be used, but
I think strawberries absorb
chemicals. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association in opposition to House Bill 2928. And our concerns, as you heard, are mainly the addition of, if you look at page 3, because food and drugs regulated by other agencies are currently exempt from the statute, on page 3, lines 42 through 44, it does eliminate the otherwise regulated by the state under the what does not apply to the statute being food and drugs. And so bringing food packaging in under the statute, which we are highly regulated now by the Department of Agriculture, just causes some concern for us. So I can't comment on the amendments that Representative Holvey was working on, but I do want to raise the concerns, and that this also does give the director the labeling authority, otherwise it would have been in statute. So when you look at how we're regulated now at the Department of Agriculture, and then in this statute, which goes on to use words such as danger, warning, poison, things like that in our packaging. You know, we like to think that the Department of Agriculture will never get to the stage where we'd have to have this kind of labeling requirement, because as you can tell, if that's on a food product in our grocery stores, it's probably not going to sell.
Cigarettes.
We just have concerns with that overlapping regulatory authority, and I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Yes, sir. Are you familiar with any products, nationally distributed products, that are either custom labeled or over labeled for the Oregon market?
Yeah, I'm not. I think the food processing industry, they're very cognizant of not wanting to put things on the labels that would deter consumers and create conflicts with federal regulation.
Thank you very much. You have a question?
Just for, can I make a comment?
Sure.
For the public record, I was just curious about BPA, having read a lot of information in the statement that FDA found it safe. For the public record, I'd want to qualify that. I just Googled it. The FDA said Tuesday, this is, I think, a year, somewhere in 2012, that baby bottles and children's drinking cups could no longer contain BPA, an estrogen mimicking industrial chemical used in some plastic bottles and food packaging. Manufacturers have already stopped using the chemical in baby bottles and sippy cups, and the FDA said that its decision was a response to a request by the American Chemistry Council, the chemistry industry's main trade association, that rules allowing BPA in those products be phased out in part to boost consumer confidence. The FDA declared BPA safe in 2008, but began expressing concerns about possible health risks in 2010. The chemical can leach into food. A study of over 2,000 people found that more than 90% of them have BPA in their urine. Traces have also been found in breast milk, the blood of pregnant women, and umbilical cord blood. Reports of potentially negative effects have made BPA notorious, especially among parents, and led to widespread shunning of products thought to contain the chemical. Canada, Chicago, Suffolk County, New York have banned BPA from children's products. In 2010, the FDA said that it had some concern about the potential effects of BPA on brain behavior and prostate gland of fetuses, infants, and children. So for the record, I don't think they've come out with anything definitive, but I would not say FDA has concluded that it's safe.
And Mr. Chair, and I just want to qualify, since you mentioned the American Chemistry Council, and I can get you their complete document that they sent into the FDA about that. In their document, they didn't ask for the FDA to ban BPA in baby bottles and sippy cups because they felt it was unsafe. It was for other reasons, and I can get you that document if you would like. I think even Canada, for instance, when they did ban BPA in baby bottles and sippy cups, they had a separate statement along with that that kind of said that we're not doing this because we think it is harmful, and we're doing it for other reasons. And
those other reasons?
Yeah. I will get you the document. I don't want to quote. I don't want to misquote them. But what they did say is that at the levels of exposure that we have, they don't feel that it is unsafe. And I'm happy to get you that document. So you're right. Maybe I shouldn't have said that they deemed it safe. I think they've deemed it unharmful at certain levels. And is there a difference? Maybe there is. Maybe there is not. I don't know.
All right. We'll take that up a different day. Thank you very much.
I'm going to take it for
support. Let's have Drew Hagedorn and Jim Craven, please.
Oh.
It's very dangerous to give legislators computers.
Yes.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Mr. Chair, we want you to buy lots of them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to work against your industry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven representing Tech America. We're the nation's largest trade association representing the high-tech industry. I'll be very brief in my opposition to House Bill 2928. I think really, even though I didn't coordinate with any of my other colleagues before testifying today, I think the comments are remarkably similar. First of all, of course, is the broadening of definition. As Representative Conger pointed out, we go from a long-standing definition in statute that really kind of a triple X on a poison bottle. I mean, that was kind of the, you know, if you read it, it's going to blow up. You're going to die if you drink this. That's roughly the definition in statute. By expanding it to chronic adverse health effects and prolonged use or exposure, the disputes among the scientists grow, obviously, because of the more difficult science of evaluating a chronic effect and prolonged exposure. So that's already been hit upon. We're making this a much bigger thing. So that's the first of all. Whether that's the right policy choice or not, of course, remains with you. But our concern is going from a statute that talks about don't drink this poison to allegations that over 20 years it may do some harm. So it is a quite different take on that definition. Number two, it's interesting, my 3 points are the same as Representative Holley's 3 points. Number two is the section on labeling of articles that contain hazardous substances. Again, this is a big, big expansion of the authority. Most of the products that you are using up there to surf the internet and answer phone calls and text messages and stuff, all your electronic products at some level, somewhere buried in that product, have a hazardous substance. You can't make microchips without them. You can't make batteries without them. You can't make circuit boards without things like lead and heavy metals and other substances. They are generally thought to be locked within that product. They are not something you're going to ingest or swallow necessarily in a normal course of activity. But it does raise a concern for us in an uncertainty level of saying that we're going to call hazardous anything that contains something that's hazardous. So that's the other issue we have with the bill, is that very big broadening of authority. And then you get kind of to the third part that expands the ability of the director to outright ban products that contain hazardous substances, not that are hazardous by their very nature. So those are our three issues. The issues that Representative Thompson raised about interstate distribution are certainly real. We don't tend to make iPhones or laptop computers for individual state markets. We don't ship them to individual state markets. We may get an order for 1,000 laptops from a regional Best Buy distribution center located, you know, somewhere in the Northwest, and they filter them out to the different stores and such. So the idea of how would you actually do state-specific labeling is also troubling to us. So pretty much our issues are similar to other issues that have been expressed, and we urge you to not move the bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of International Global Pooling Systems, or IGPS. As my written submission, the Perkins Coie document indicates, they rent plastic shipping pallets used in international commerce. I think all of you might look at me and say, why are you a representative of a plastic shipping pallet company here today? And it's because we believe this bill actually would apply to us. We no longer purchase shipping pallets, and haven't since 2010, that contain the flame retardant decabromine. But we still have a lot of those products still in the stream of commerce internationally that are being used by some of the folks that testified here today to move their products through our ports. In addition, because we still have some of those in the stream of commerce, we also recycle our used pallets and develop them into new pallets. And those new pallets may contain some of those old traces of decabromine from the original pallets that we were recycling. So for those reasons, we believe this applies to us. I think others before me have done an excellent job of describing some of the concerns with the bill. There was one other legal issue that I wanted to flag for the committee, and that is we believe there may be a commerce clause issue here as well. So we believe that the bill likely may encounter some federal constitutional challenges because of the constraints it would place on interstate commerce. For example, and I think Representative Thompson alluded to this, it would require products coming into Oregon to have be essentially singled out and separately labeled, which we believe would unduly burden companies doing business nationwide. So for those reasons, we'd ask you to oppose the bill. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Question
from Whip, sorry.
Mr. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for whoever wants to answer it. I think there are good reasons to oppose this, but I want to remind us that labeling is already done on a per-state basis in many products, right? Bottles and cans contain state-specific labeling. Is there a difference here that I'm missing? Couldn't any of these products say subject to blah, blah, blah in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Parker, good point. I guess my position would be that it's not possible. It's not possible to put labels on products. It's just it adds to uncertainty and cost and difficulties. Certainly, you could have people at the, I don't want to say grocery store if Mr. Miller's still behind me. But, I mean, people, when it comes in on a shipment, breaking them down and sticking a sticker on, I suppose you can do anything. It seems like in the, and I don't really understand the soda business very well, but I think that's regionally produced or even in-state produced. And as you see on your can, you'll see apply is 10 cents the following 8 states, 6 cents the following states. I imagine that's a fun thing to try to keep track of. But it is possible. If many of you flip over your laptop, you'll see a lot of labels on the bottom. A lot of those are a result of international treaties on hazardous materials. So Yeah, but most of those on your electronic products are global labelings that apply pretty much everywhere.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harker, in the case of our plastic shipping pallets, they're already in the international stream of commerce, so it's not as though they're being originated and could have that label put at the product development phase. So.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think I'm starting to like this bill because if I don't have to deal with a laptop and a phone, people can't bug me anymore, and it would almost be like freedom again.
Well, I think you have to. It's just hazardous. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3466. I'm sorry, 2928. And let me make a couple of comments before we close. First of all, we can't really afford many more days like today where we had seven items on the agenda and dealt with three. We have 37 more bills to deal with in the next six sessions we have in order to get all of our work done. I think there may be another one or two besides that. I saw one coming over today, I think I saw. So we really have to make sure we do everything we can to get any amendments ready. Mr. Larson is working very hard to make sure we have fiscals on things we need to move, but and if there are any things on there that are yours that you don't really intend to move, let us know as fast as you can, and we can organize things. I do want to mention an item. Representative Conger brought a bill to us that would require a sort of fiscal impact statement on any insurance bill mandates. And as I was thinking about that and talking to some others, I remembered we actually have a statute on that right now. I ran across it when we were trying to deal with autism a couple of years back. And I wondered why we ignore it. It turns out that we that ignore it are we that ignore it. And Representative Congress came up with the notion that we ignore it because it's not required to be followed by the House rules. Representative Conger and I are going to propose an amendment to the House rules to be brought in now if it makes sense to bring it in, not because it's going to affect what we're doing in this session, but because it will be there to begin the discussion with the rules in the next session. So we'll I don't know what
aye.
We'll do with that.
Aye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know whether we'll bring it up to the committee or we'll just bring it forward, but
very good.
It's very odd to have a statute that we don't like other people ignoring, but we ignore a statute directed at us. So you'll be hearing more about that, and I really thank Representative Conger for bringing it up. And my old memory cells.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I just have to say for the record, I'm awfully impressed that you remembered after looking at my bill draft, which does not, you know, it's the same intent, but it's certainly not the same language as the ORS, which I actually have here if anybody wants to take a look at it. I'm impressed that you remembered that from a couple of years ago. I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
So that's why I had trouble yesterday. A few years. The further back it goes, the easier it is to do. We'll be here Friday. We'll have two more things from today plus about six or eight things that are there. So we're going to try and use this. And the more we move into work sessions, the less we have to deal with public hearings, and perhaps we'll be more expeditious. If you actually hate any bills that are coming forward, let me know in advance. It would be a little easier for me to take a vote count on it. Having that, this is very discouraging. We end 45 minutes early on the day we needed the time, but we are adjourned.